Writer Jhumpa Lahiri grew up in Rhode Island. She was born in England to parents whose home was India. In her first collection of short stories, the characters are immigrants and exiles, displaced men, women, and children who navigate the great spaces between three continents to seek happiness beyond the boundaries of place and culture. In the title story, Interpreter of Maladies, an American family is visiting sites in India. Their guide, who also works in a doctor's office as an interpreter, develops an infatuation with the wife until she makes a dramatic confession to him. Jhumpa Lahiri says the title came to her long before the story did.
I was a graduate student in Boston at the time, and I ran into an acquaintance, and he said he was working as an interpreter for a doctor in Brookline, Massachusetts, where there are a number of Russian immigrants, and especially older Russian immigrants. The phrase just came into my head, and I rushed home, and I wrote it down. I felt a need to write this little phrase down because I thought it might make a nice title someday. I would look at it from time to time and try to write something, and I really had no idea until about 5 years later, and the idea for this story came to me.
Mm. Tell us how it contributes to the whole metaphor of the book and the whole theme of the stories that you're writing.
I don't know if I always succeed, but I think that what draws me to write is that desire to be able to interpret between two cultures. It was something that I felt necessary to do from a very young age, interpreting between the way my parents thought versus the way people at school thought. And as I got older, this just became more and more complex. And then when I would go to India, I would see a whole other world. I saw sort of yet another world that I felt connected to. And all three of these worlds, you know, the sort of immigrant Indian world, the Indian world in India, and the American world that surrounded me, all three of them seemed so disconnected in a fundamental way.
It sounds like a tough position to be in. I mean, trying to mediate between these three different worlds.
Well, it wasn't so much that people were asking me to mediate. I think it was just that it was something that I did to try and understand the world that I inhabited or the worlds that I inhabited. I think that one of the things that complicated my own adolescence was that, in addition to the things that everyone else goes through in adolescence in terms of, you know, trying to rebel against their parents, I tried to rebel against a whole culture at times. I think that added an entire new layer that was difficult at the time. And then I think once I got to college, got a little bit more, at least physical distance from my family and home, which was, after all, the strongest representation of India that I had, I was drawn back more to certain things I had tried to reject.
Like what?
So, like speaking Bengali, it was my first language. I didn't speak any English at all until I was probably three, and I was enrolled in a nursery school. But then I think when I was a teenager, they would speak to me in Bengali, and I would respond to them in English. Hmm. And I don't know what I don't know if this was a conscious decision or what I was thinking, but I just felt tired of always doing it their way, you know. Hmm. And perhaps it was my own way to assert the American side of my identity.
There is a story toward the middle of the book. It's called Mrs. Send, and this is the story about an 11-year-old boy who actually has a babysitter who is a woman from India, and she seems so very sad. I mean, she keeps her saris all folded up in the closet, in her drawer, and the one thing that seems to make her most happy is when she gets a letter from home, from India. Is that your mom?
She was obviously the model for that story. I think the story shows her at a particular time. When I was quite young, she herself looked after children in our house. And, you know, I would see these kids come and wonder what they must be thinking being looked after by, you know, a Bengali woman who spoke a different language when she was on the phone to her husband, or to me for that matter. I think over time she adjusted, as all people adjust to changes, and I don't think she's as needy as Mrs. Sen, the character Mrs. Sen, is in the story.
Did a lot of the stories in this collection come in some ways from your parents? I mean, people your parents knew, stories that they would tell you?
A couple of them. Others are more my own, closer to my own experience, and still others are more based more on my observations of people when I would visit India.
I read that you have said that you were once told that a woman should never read a story aloud that's narrated in the first person by a male character.
That's right.
I do believe the last story in your book is written in the first person by a male character.
It is. It is. And that was a real struggle for me to eventually try it that way. I was trying to write the story for months from the third point of view because I simply couldn't believe that I could possibly write from the first person male point of view. I had written a couple of stories prior to that third person male point of view. So I was beginning to look at life through the eyes of a man, but not as a man. And what complicated the matter in this story was that the man happened to be my father. But the story just wouldn't work until I tried it this way. But I have never read it out loud because I heard this piece of advice. So
we're going to change that.
I had a feeling you were going to say that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's called The Third and Final Continent. It appeared in the summer fiction issue of The New Yorker. The character of your father is a student who comes to live in Boston, and he takes a room with a woman who's 103 years old.
That's right. He's come over from England, where he spent a couple of years. The character is born and raised in India. He's married his wife, but doesn't know her at all. They haven't really had a conversation, spent a handful of nights together. By the end of the story, his wife has come to meet him. He's rented a new house. Mrs. Croft has since died, and he's sort of moved into a new phase of his life with his wife. They're beginning to come to know each other and come to know the United States together and building their lives slowly.
And one piece of just fact that might help with the reading, too, this when he is living with Mrs. Croft, it's 1969, and the men have landed on the moon, and one of the things that Mrs. Croft can't get over is that there's an American flag on the moon.
Whenever we make that drive, I always make it a point to take Massachusetts Avenue, in spite of the traffic. I barely recognize the buildings now, but each time I'm there, I return instantly to those 6 weeks, as if they were only the other day. And I slow down and point to Mrs. Croft's street, saying to my son, "Here was my first home in America, where I lived with a woman who was 103. Remember, Mala says, and smiles, amazed as I am, that there was ever a time that we were strangers. My son always expresses his astonishment, not at Mrs. Croft's age, but at how little I paid in rent, a fact nearly as inconceivable to him as a flag on the moon was to a woman born in 1866. In my son's eyes, I see the ambition that had first hurled me across the world. In a few years, he will graduate and pave his way, alone and unprotected. But I remind myself that he has a father who is still living, a mother who is happy and strong. Whenever he is discouraged, I tell him if I can survive on three continents, then there is no obstacle he cannot conquer. While the astronauts, heroes forever, spent mere hours on the moon, I have remained in this new world for nearly 30 years. I know that my achievement is quite ordinary. I am not the only man to seek his fortune far from home, and certainly I am not the first. Still, there are times I am bewildered by each mile I have traveled, each meal I have eaten, each person I have known, each room in which I have slept. As ordinary as it all appears, there are times when it is beyond my imagination.
Jhumpa Lahiri. Her new collection of short stories is called Interpreter of Maladies, and it's published by Mariner Houghton Mifflin. Jhumpa joined us from New York. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Leanne.